today on Straight Talk Africa, he was indeed the greatest. And some would say the people's champion both in and outside the ring. Muhammad Ali was regarded by Africans as their first truly African-American. U.S. President Barack Obama likens him, the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., and the Madiba himself, Nelson Mandela. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, June 8th. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we bring you a tribute to the greatest, Muhammad Ali.
Indeed, Shaka, so many in our social media platform have expressed those thoughts. And coming up later in our STA inbox, we'll share those thoughts on our topic through emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. That's ahead on Straight Talk Africa. Hope you'll stay with us.
Boxing legend Muhammad Ali was not only known for his incredible skill inside the ring, but he also was known for his activism outside the ring. My colleague Paul Sisco has more.
Ali Bomaye, they chanted, days before Muhammad Ali's heavyweight championship fight with George Foreman in Kinshasa in 1974. Ali was not just a three-time world champion, but he was Africa's champion. He was an icon and inspiration to Africans, first as a fighter, and forever for his beliefs. The native son of Louisville, Kentucky, first hit the world stage, winning an Olympic gold medal in the 1960 Rome Olympics. Some refer to Muhammad Ali as the first true African-American. His connection with Africa has long been deep and meaningful.
I told you all that I was the greatest of all time when I beat Sonny Liston. I told you today, I'm still the greatest of all time.
The love and respect is mutual.
Last night, I had a dream. When I got to Africa, I had one hell of a rumble. I had to beat Tarzan's behind first for claiming to be the king in the jungle. For this fight, I've wrestled with alligators. I've tussled with a whale. I done handcuffed lightning and put thunder in jail. You know I'm bad. I have murdered a rock. I injured a stone and I hospitalized a brick. I'm so bad, I make medicine sick. I'm so fast, man, I can run through a hurricane and don't get wet. When George Foreman meets me, he'll pay his debt. I can drown a drink of water and kill a dead tree. Wait till you see Muhammad Ali.
The relationship between Ali and the continent was rooted in shared struggles and beliefs. The self-proclaimed Muslim championed Pan-Africanism. He met with Ghanaian nationalist leader Kwame Nkrumah and former Egyptian President Gamal Nasser and thousands of his African fans on a debut tour to Ghana, Nigeria, and Egypt. Ali was always treated as a hero wherever he went across the continent. The boxing icon visited Africa several times. First as Cassius Clay, and later as Muhammad Ali, the man often called the people's champion, never lacked confidence.
It's going to be a hard, it's going to take a good man to whoop me. You can look at me, I'm loaded with confidence. I can't beat me. I had 180 amateur fights, 22 professional fights, and I'm pretty as a girl.
And in his own words, was pretty too.
Make me no underdog and never talk about who's going to stop me. Well, ain't nobody going to stop me. Not a heavyweight in the world fast enough to stop me. I give you one more chance. Who's the greatest?
You are. All right.
In 1974, Muhammad Ali was hosted by President Mobutu Sese Seko in Kinshasa, Zaire, now the Democratic Republic of Congo. The famed Rumble in the Jungle title fight against George Foreman gave Africans a front row seat to one of the defining moments of Ali's career and life. There he regained the heavyweight championship, which had been stripped from him in the late 1960s for refusing induction into the U.S. Armed Forces.
Clay's induction refusal cost him his title, and he faces a possible five-year prison sentence.
60,000 fans in Kinshasa and millions of Africans across the continent and the world saw him knock out George Foreman. Others consider the 1975 Thrilla in Manila Ali's and boxing's greatest heavyweight fight. In the stifling Manila heat, he defeated Joe Frazier when Frazier's trainer refused to allow him to answer the bell for the 15th and final round. A friend and inspiration to generations, the powerful and the powerless, world leaders and presidents, Muhammad Ali had no greater admirer than Nelson Mandela. For years, we've known the eventual outcome of Muhammad Ali's fight against Parkinson's disease. We've also known that this battle would be fought with grace and style to the very end. The greatest, Muhammad Ali. Paul Sisko, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Joining us today are four distinguished guests. Sunny Young, VOA host, the Sunny Side of Sports. Ni Akwete, Executive Director, African Immigrant Caucus. Gentlemen, I have to say, I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the two of you on Straight Talk Africa for the show.
Thank you, Shaka. Pleasure to be here.
You're most welcome. And of course, it's always a pleasure having you, really, Sunny.
It's an honor to be with you on the program with Sunny, too.
The feeling is mutual, Ni Akwete. And Nandi Maweta, or Hollywood Nandi Maweta, a radio host and boxing promoter. He joins us from VOA Los Angeles Bureau. Well, Nandi, what a pleasure to see you on the screen from the City of the Angels.
Pleasure is mine, the mighty Shaka.
You're most welcome. And last but not least, Ambassador Chintu Nyago, Ugandan Deputy Permanent Representative to the United Nations. He joins us from the VOA UN studios in New York. Well, Mr. Ambassador, it's a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you, Shaka. The pleasure is also mine.
Well, later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately, Sunny. What was your immediate reaction when you got the news that the greatest had passed away on Friday?
Tremendous sorrow at the passing of the man I consider the most significant, influential athlete of my times. I grew up with Muhammad Ali. I remember as a little boy watching his trilogy against Smokin' Joe Frazier, staying up into the wee hours to watch the Rumble in the Jungle against Smokin' Joe Frazier, against George Foreman, and just a lot of his funny stuff with Howard Cosell on Wide World of Sports, you know, like pulling at Howard's toupee and a lot of the funny things he would say. And I think Ali... The Ali that I remember and that I will always remember was probably the Ali of the 70s, the one who fought anywhere, mm-hmm. and he would fight anyone. It didn't matter. He fought all over the globe. His last fight was in the Bahamas, but he fought in Africa. He fought in the Philippines. He fought in Malaysia. He fought in Puerto Rico, all over the world. And so people... all over the world got a chance to see his skills and his verbosity. I consider him the first modern sports rapper with his verse and his float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. And he was just a larger than life figure.
Very interesting. What about you, Nia Kwete? What was your first reaction?
Well, you know, I was stunned. Now, of course, as was mentioned in the intro, he's been sick for a while, and then we even heard earlier in the week that he had checked into the hospital, but I thought that he would make it through. So when the news comes, it was like, wow, another giant has left. It brought a lot of memories back to me. My very first memory of hearing of him, of course, was the Sonny Liston fight. But then 3 months later, he was in Accra, the city in which I was born, visiting President Nkrumah, spent 2 weeks in Ghana, went to Kumasi. So he dominated the news. Now, of course, for the past several decades, I've lived in Washington as an activist, working on policy issues, and my admiration of him In fact, my wonderment at his skills have deepened because now I look at him as not just a skilled boxer, not just an audacious man, but his ability to change public policy. I mean, he stands on his refusal to go to Vietnam. And initially, this country wasn't as much against Vietnam as he was. And then it all turned around, and you have to credit him because for those 3 years, he went around campuses talking to students about why he wouldn't go. Then, of course, he was a big Pan-Africanist. And then beyond that, you have to look at his stance against colonialism and imperialism and refusal to go to Vietnam. And, of course, he switched religions. So he was a global figure. So my respect for him as an activist, a global activist, and somebody who embraced Pan-Africanism is awesome. And I'm still trying to process that such a giant has left. And I'm wondering whether we did him justice when he was around.
Hollywood Nandi Moweta, your reaction Friday?
Well, Shaka, he passed on the Friday in a special month, month of Ramadan. He's been living with this pain from the world of boxing. Allah has welcomed him. He's at peace. And I think we will never forget Muhammad Ali. I still remember watching that fight at 3 a.m. in Lagos, Nigeria. The 8-round knockout, the whole city exploded, you know, and his legacy will always live on.
Very interesting. Now, of course, you talked about 3 a.m. in Lagos, and he, of course, Sunny Young was telling us, waking up to watch the Rumble in the Jungle. Boy, the match, in fact, had been rigged in the favor of the Americans. It is the Africans that had to wake up very, very early in the morning. And I remember, in fact, waking up very early in the morning in the Ugandan capital, Kampala, around 4 a.m.
But, Shaka, don't forget that the Americans were the ones that were paying the bulk of the money from pay-per-view. You remember that? The Africans put up the money, which was $5 million apiece per fighter. The bulk of the rest of the money was coming in from the U.S. and the rest of the world. And that was 8 p.m. prime time in the U.S.
Very interesting. Now, of course, Hollywood Nandi Moweta, I know, of course, that you are, among other things, a boxing promoter. What would you say that was perhaps the effect, really, from the Rumble in the Jungle to African boxers? I'm talking, of course, 1994 fight between then world champion George Foreman and then challenger Muhammad Ali.
Well, Shaka, after that fight, there was something all the kids were doing in the neighborhood called the Ali Shuffle, the rope-a-dope. as we travel around Africa, putting on shows, if it's Bukom in Ghana or in Lagos, Nigeria, the mainland boxing club, or in Soweto, all the young ones are practicing the Ali Shuffle, the rope-a-dope, and his fast hands. We cannot forget that. He brought a lot to the game, and right after the Rumble in the Jungle, the sports of boxing really, really came alive, and lots of other boxers came up right after that because he brought a lot into the game in Africa.
Now, what do you think is likely to be his lasting legacy, Hollywood Moweta?
What he stood for, what he fought for, and the fact that he's the first fighter to be a global ambassador. I mean, a first fighter to have that global reach. What we have today is a bunch of pretenders. If you ask me today, who is the heavyweight champion of the world? Can you name one or two? No. During the days of Muhammad Ali, you say, who is the heavyweight champion of the world? You can say, yes, it's Muhammad Ali.
It's Muhammad Ali. What about some who say Hollywood Nandi Moweta that Muhammad Ali was obviously a great, great boxer, but that perhaps he basically used boxing really as a platform to accomplish other larger goals. Mainly, we're talking about his role in the civil rights. We're talking about his humanitarian aspect.
Mm-hmm. I think those are things that will always be said when we mention Muhammad Ali. today in the game, Floyd Mayweather, who is like the number one boxer on the planet today, he will not be able to do what Muhammad Ali has been able to do over the years. What he stood for, the friendship he developed, not only in Africa, around the globe.
Very interesting, Nandi. Hollywood, Nandi Mawet, of course, it was a pleasure, of course, having you on Straight Talk Africa, and we look forward to having you again next time around.
Thanks a lot.
You're most welcome. Now we'll pause for a short break and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka, that's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Muhammad Ali. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. After a short break, former world heavyweight champion Raleigh Holmes will join us.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back. But before we continue with the program, we are delighted to be joined from Eastern Pennsylvania via telephone link up by the one and only Raleigh Holmes, a former world heavyweight champion and International Hall of Fame inductee. Good afternoon, Raleigh Holmes.
Hello, how are you?
I am hugely terrific. I have to say, frankly, that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to host you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Well, thank you very much. You know, I'm glad to be on the show. This will be my first time, or maybe the second or third time, that I've been on any show from Africa. This is really nice.
You're most welcome. We hope that one of these days you will grace this Studio 52 here in Washington, D.C. What about that?
That sounds even better. That's closer to me.
You're most welcome. Talk to me, Lale. What was your immediate reaction when you got the news that the greatest had passed away?
Well, I kind of like expected because, you know, a few months ago I was down there in Louisville with him, and he didn't look too good. And I said to my wife, I don't know about that. I said, I don't think he got too much longer. I said, he don't look good because he didn't talk. He didn't just sit there, just stood. And, you know, I was, like, worried, you know, and I didn't want to go back and see him again. But I went back and seen him again. He was still the same, doing the same thing. So, but I kind of expected. But one of the things about it hurt me. It hurt me because not only he was a friend of mine, but I think he was one of the greatest fighters ever lived in this world.
Very interesting. You happen to be one of the elite five boxers that, in fact, defeated at one time Muhammad Ali. But yet again, you happen perhaps to be a very unique individual, given that you were his former sparring partner, lasting about 4 years, a friend, and of course, eventually a world heavyweight champion. What was it like to fight Muhammad Ali?
You know, it wasn't a good pleasure fighting Muhammad because, you know, he was my friend and he was my boss. And then I had to fight him, you know, but then it was the money thing, you know. If I beat him, I'd be the old man. If I lost, I never had anything. So, you know, my thing was not to take it hard on him because, you know, I knew how he would fight. And I knew that I could beat him. So I don't want to hurt Muhammad Ali because he is my friend. And so when we fought, you know, I told him, don't get hurt. Just don't go crazy. I did. I said, I don't want to hurt nobody. I don't want you to be hurt. And, you know, he told me, shut up and fight, you know. And I did what I had to do without hurting him, I think. I don't think I hurt him. And, you know, we remained friends because right after the fight, I went back to his dressing room and I told him, I gave him a hug and told him I love him. And he said, if you love me, why you beat me up like that, Dad? So, You know, he was a great man, and he wasn't angry with me or nothing like that, because it was about the money. He got $10 million, and you know, back then that was a lot of money. You know, so he was happy, and we remained friends even after the fight.
Any particular reason, Rally, why you cried after the bout? You don't seem really to have enjoyed the fight.
I don't enjoy the fight. He was my friend. He was my boss. You know what I mean? You know, he was a guy that helped teach me how to fight. I mean, when I first went with him in 1971, I was just an amateur. I was learning how to fight. And he gave me the opportunity to come to his camp and work out with him, you know, and learn from him. He gave me that opportunity. When I worked out with Muhammad Ali for the very first time, we went to Reading, Pennsylvania. He gave me gloves and shoes, everything to box with, and he gave me the opportunity to box. And when he boxed with me, of course, he gave me the black eye, right? He gave me the black eye, and I loved it. And I said, it's okay. He wanted to put ice on my eye, and I won't let him put ice. He goes, why? I said, because I'm showing this off Muhammad Ali. Hit me in my eye. I said, this is nice. I can show it off. And, you know, he told me I was crazy. Put the ice, but I never put ice. And then when I got home, I bragged about Muhammad Ali boxing me and giving me a black eye. It was a brag. Yeah, I bragged about it.
Now, knowing him the way you did, and of course you have to be one of the few very unique individuals that do that, do you sincerely feel, do you sincerely think that it was necessary for Muhammad Ali to fight the last two fights? I'm talking about yours and the one of Trevor Babik in the Bahamas.
Yeah, well, Trevor Babik, he didn't need to fight, but what it was about was the money. It was about the money with Ali. He started fighting for money after he couldn't beat me. He just said, I'll take a fight with money. And I didn't like that fight. I didn't think he should have took it. But again, you can't tell people what to do, because, you know, the man, when I do tell him that he's a champ, I said, shut up. He can do what he want to do, so I don't say anything. Well, if he was the champ, in my opinion, he was always going to be the champ. So, you know, the Babik fight, the Trevor Babik fight, Trevor Babik didn't fight the Ali that I fought. If he did, he would have got beat.
Well, given that you, again, happen to be one of the few people that interacted with him in a very special manner, what is it that during that experience, really, that you learned? What did you learn from him, and what did that interaction mean to you?
Hey, listen, I got the best jab in boxing. I had the best jab in boxing because of Muhammad Ali, because I tried to keep up with him. And when he threw the jab, I wanted to throw the jab. I wanted to beat him to the jab because everybody knew how Ali was. Everybody knew that he was a good jabber. He always jabbed right-hand combination. And I wanted to be like that, so I worked on that, to beat him to the jab. And that's why I lasted so long in boxing, because I had a good jab. Everybody had to worry about the Larry Holmes jab. And then when they worried about the Larry Holmes jab, then they had to worry about the right. And so they couldn't do both. And I was able to win the fight.
What was it like being with him in Zaire back in 1974? I'm talking about the Rambo in the jungle.
In the jungle. I was there with him. I was there with Muhammad Ali, the Rambo in the jungle, in Zaire. And he trained good. I mean, you know, people love him. Ali Boumaye. Ali Boumaye.
Ali killed him. Ali killed him.
Yeah. And, you know, it's all out. And a lot of people that didn't speak good English, but they know how to say Ali Boumaye. We didn't know how to speak African, so we said Ali Boumaye. You know, we said the same thing, Ali Boumaye, Ali Boumaye. And it was neat. And people, everywhere you go, people love you. You know, they run after, they take little kids running behind the car, Ali, Ali, Ali. I mean, you know, it was mind-boggling. And you know what Ali said? He said, boy, he said, you're home. This is home, man. This is what our people look like. This is what we look like. And you know, he was very proud to be in Zaire. And I was just as proud as he was, because I was with the greatest fighter of all time.
Any particular reason why the people preferred Ali to the champion himself, George Foreman?
George Foreman, though, it was okay boxer, but you know, they didn't like George Foreman. I mean, you know, because Ali, they loved Ali, they didn't like George Foreman. because George Foreman wasn't no Muhammad Ali. And people, everywhere Ali go, people go with him. But George, they didn't do that with George.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that's okay because I didn't like George either.
I see. Well, I gather that he couldn't autograph your boxing gloves. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Very interesting. Have you been to Africa, Lale, since 1974? And if not, when do you plan to do so?
I did not go to Zaire, but I've been in different parts of Africa already. Yeah, I've been in different parts. But I've never been back to Zaire, but I would like to go back to Zaire. And I met some Africans here, and they always tell me that they're going to send for me, and they're going to make arrangements for me to come there, but they never do. And they just told me they're going to do it. Matter of fact, last week I got a call and saying that, Larry, we want you to come to Africa. But that's the last thing I heard. Nobody bring me over, so...
Final question, Lale. What is it like to be a world heavyweight champion of the world? And you were for many years.
Well, it was an honor to be the heavyweight champion of the world. It's an honor to represent black fighters that to be able to do something. It was great to honor white fighters if they work hard enough, they can be something. You know, it means something when anybody that works hard as I work can be anything that they want to be. You know, whether you're black, whether white, or orange, or green color, I don't care. If you work at something, you can always be that. Ali was living proof that if you work at it, you can be it. And he was Wayne's example. He moralized boxing, and he would go down as one of the greatest fighters of all time. And I'm just glad to say that I was one of the guys who helped him become one of the great fighters of all time.
Lale, do I take it as a commitment that you will indeed come here in Washington, Studio 52, on Straight Talk Africa one of these days?
Yeah, I'm hoping that I will do that.
Thank you very much. I think we should be able to arrange that and talk about going on a trip to the motherland, Africa.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Okay, bye.
It was a pleasure. Well, very interesting. Your reaction, Sandy?
Yeah, I loved listening to Larry Holmes. What I got from a wonderful interview, Shaka, was how much he loved Ali. And also the conflict in having to beat Ali well past his prime as a former sparring partner and a friend, a good friend of Muhammad Ali. But also what I heard was how much Ali taught him.
Yes.
With the jab.
Yes.
And how he learned from the greatest and became a heavyweight champion in his own right.
In fact, he says that he basically happened to live in a generation of professors of boxing, really. And he talks about Muhammad Ali. He talked, of course, about George Foreman. And, of course, Joe Frazier.
Maybe the greatest period ever for the heavyweight division in the 70s. I also loved what he said about how the Congolese, how they reacted to Foreman.
Yes.
For the Rumble in the Jungle. And that was a different George. George. Mm-hmm. He was a scowling type of guy back then.
But he was a young man. He was 25, really. Yeah, he had the top of the world.
He hadn't started selling the grills yet. Ali was treated like a king when he came there.
And a king he was. Well, you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Maria Majero. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding and fantastic feedback we've received from our audience through social media. But now, here is our letter of the week from a Straight Talk Africa Facebook fan. Louis Ahimbisibwe from Uganda writes, "I believe in defiance because it really works. Imagine where the black race would be if black heroes like Muhammad Ali, Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, and others didn't defy the white suppression.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. Call us collects and we'll pay for the call. Or call directs and we'll call you right back. Remember to keep your questions brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidu-Uwat, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Shaka, I can probably start saying, Ali, Bombaye, and just remembering all those wonderful memories about, indeed, the greatest sports fans and admirers of Muhammad Ali across the globe are today remembering and mourning their hero after it was announced that the former world heavyweight boxing champion, 1960 Olympic light heavyweight gold medalist, and influential social activist had died. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, which asks, does the passing of the greatest Muhammad Ali mark the end of an era? Before we begin, I'd like to thank you all for using all our social media platforms to communicate with us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Just use the hashtag VOA Muhammad Ali. And if you haven't yet, do follow us at VOA Shaka. And speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Martin Nyalusi from Tanzania, who tweets that Ali will be remembered for being a black man who showed the world that black people can make it. Now to a comment from one of our Facebook followers, Omunua Okugbo Igodalo from Nigeria, who writes, Muhammad Ali was a principal part of an unforgettable generation. He was more of a global statesman than a boxer. Hence, he fought far more significant battles outside the boxing ring. Muhammad Ali worked tirelessly for a world where every human being had dignity because he had an active and living conscience. Well, some powerful comments here just showing just how much he's meant to so many people out there. Shaka and guests, your take.
Indeed. Ambassador Kintu Nyago, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Shaka.
Your reaction, sir, your reaction to what we just had.
Well, thank you, Shaka. I'll just begin by complimenting on what the great boxing legend Larry Holmes talked about, why Muhammad Ali was much loved in Kinshasa as compared to George Foreman. Ali deliberately spent more time in Kinshasa before the fight. And also, he interacted more intimately with the people, jogging, talking to them. And that helped him to create what you can call a synergy or some kind of chemistry between him and the people. Well, plus the fact that he was an icon by then, after having refused to go to be drafted into the Vietnam War. But I mean, it was deliberately Ali liked the people, and he spent more time with the people, related with the people, and also attempted to identify with their culture. And that was very, very critical in terms of Ali's creating the synergy and the chemistry between himself and the ordinary people in Kinshasa. Now, in Africa, you find that Ali was also viewed as an icon, and people are mourning because you find that, say, the Nelson Mandela Foundation has sent its condolence messages. Leaders like President Museveni also sent their condolence messages. And also in Uganda, you find that there's a special attachment between the boxing fraternity and Muhammad Ali, in the sense that in 1960, one of our boxing coaches informed us that he trained Muhammad Ali in Rome. And this, again, points out to Muhammad Ali's humble nature and wanting to relate with people, because Muhammad Ali, who was 18 then, and in the American team, in the Olympic team, came over and politely requested Mr. Tom Kawere, who was the coach for the Ugandan team. He wanted to train with Africans. And Mr. Kawere accepted Ali for three main reasons. Because he was black, that's point one. But point two was because Ali was polite to him. And then he allowed him. But, I mean, it was unusual for a coach to allow somebody from a competing team to come and train with him. And then he allowed Ali to train as a young man, and he was impressed by Ali. And Kaori also points out that he did give one or two tips to Muhammad Ali. So Muhammad Ali is somebody who is really a very good icon, a role model to many people. And also, we remember him because of his activism. And we should not forget that he sacrificed four of his best years in life as a sportsman, because when he refused to be drafted, that was the best time as a sportsman. I mean, in boxing, you can't do it forever, like, say, in some of the other activities. So the best time in his life, he sacrificed it, and he lost a lot of opportunity and money. But, I mean, he stood by his principle, and that's very, very important. Plus the fact that, as we have mentioned, he eventually actually even became a statesman. He became a statesman in America, because we should remember that, because he met in the White House, I think, four presidents, including Reagan, Mr. Bush, G.W. Bush gave him a medal. He met Mr. Clinton and Mr. Barack Obama. So he became, even a statesman within America. And even, I do remember, President Carter did send him on an emissary to Africa, I think, in 1980.
Very interesting. In addition to the interaction between then box, of course, Cassius Clay in 1960 in Rome with the Ugandan team, which was, of course, coached by Etom Kawere, Muhammad Ali also happened to have visited Uganda in 1989 and took some pictures, in fact, with Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, who made some remarks suggesting that Ali, in Museveni's words, epitomized things like discipline, determination, and defense for the marginalized people. Ali, he added, was also a revolutionary in his own right. What was he looking
for? Very true.
What was Ali looking for? He seems to have a thirst or a curiosity for Africa, a land perhaps where his ancestors came from.
Well, you must appreciate the historical context under which Ali grew up. I mean, in the 1960s, Jim Crow rose in America. I mean, black people didn't have much of a say. So that was the background. And then you find that within that context, he emerges as a very talented young man. And for some reason, I guess, based on the way he was brought up or whatever it was, he had very strong conviction. Plus the fact that he related with the Elijah Muhammad of the black Muslim Nation of Islam, all that, I think, informed his consciousness. And then one other thing, Shaka, that we should recall about Muhammad Ali is the fact that currently you find that many people associate Islam with violence, but Muhammad Ali, as a Muslim, who became eventually even a Sunni Muslim, was a peaceful person, and he used to profess loudly and clearly and very articulately to everybody who could listen to him that Islam is a peaceful religion, and as really exemplified by his own character.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, Mariam, thank you a lot for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, thank you, Shaka. That will do it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. If you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa, and don't forget to follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Just go to the VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website, or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. Next week on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss African Liberation Day. Join host Shaka Sali, his panel of guests, and me, your social media reporter, as we talk about the African Union. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back, and today we bring you a tribute to the greatest, Muhammad Ali. Our distinguished guests are Sunny Yang himself, VOA host of Sunnyside of Sports, Ni Akwete, Executive Director, African Immigrant Caucus, and Ambassador Kintu Nyago, Ugandan Permanent Representative to the United Nations. He joins us from VOA's UN studios in New York. Well, gentlemen, I have to say again that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
The pleasure all belongs to us. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Shaka.
Thank you, Shaka.
You're most welcome indeed. Well, you obviously heard the exploits of young Muhammad Ali and his thirst for the motherland of Africa. You know, sometimes people forget, by the way, that Muhammad Ali initially, it is interesting how he found himself a boxer. He was, the story goes, 12 years young. That's right. Somebody steals his bicycle.
A Schwinn.
And he goes to report the case to a police officer who was, I think, a Joe Marty.
Yes.
And he says, if I catch this thief, I'm going to whop him. And Joe suggested to him that, you know what, you may want to take up boxing, learn a bit of boxing. And that's how Muhammad Ali, in 6 years' time from then, wins, yes. Can you believe, an Olympic gold medal for the United States. An Olympic gold medal, light heavyweight. He takes it back to Louisville. You know, it's called the Louisville Leap.
Yes.
He can't even have a meal in a restaurant in his neighborhood.
Yes.
He's not, in fact, acknowledged by his neighbors, really, as an American hero. He's a hero with an asterisk.
Yes.
What does he do? He throws his medal in the river, which, of course, was replaced in 1996, the Atlanta Olympics, when he held the torch.
Yes.
Your reaction?
Well, you know, I mean, he was such a talented man. I think he had many, many, many facets. So I'm one of the people who think that he used his amazing boxing skills to do other things. As you mentioned, I mean, in 6 years, from a 12-year-old to an 18-year-old, he was a world champion. And Mr. Martin mentioned what great discipline he had, how much he trained. I think Larry Holmes also mentioned it, that when they were in Zaire, he trained a lot. And then his courage. But I do think what will last after him, and of course I'm speaking in a biased way as an activist, that is activism, his global work, including humanitarian work, going to Ivory Coast to help refugees from Liberia during the Civil War. So I think he's going to be more than just a sportsman. He's going to be a towering historical figure. He is.
It is interesting that soon after beating Sonny Liston in Florida, guess where he goes first? To the Republic of Ghana.
Yes.
Which had regained its political independence in 1957,
yes,
from the British, whose president, or at that time, in fact, President 64, Kwame Nkrumah,
correct,
had actually been mentored by, among others, one of African-Americans or American giant intellectuals, W.E.B. Du Bois,
yes,
who had actually been buried in Accra in 1963.
That is precisely the
George Padmore himself.
Yes, yes. And, you know, Nkrumah schooled in the United States.
Correct, 10 years.
Yes, 10 mm-hmm. years. He got 3 degrees.
He got to Lincoln, the, University of Pennsylvania.
Yes.
He probably did some work at Howard.
He did some work at Howard. So he had a great American connection. He had a great American connection with African Americans. In fact, initially he had thought about becoming a priest. and therefore he had preached in African American churches before he became an activist. You know, he's rightly seen as a huge Pan-African leader. But in fact, there were growth of Pan-Africanism in the United States that he picked up on. The Pan-African conference that Nkrumah helped organize in the UK was number 5. W.E.B. Du Bois, George Padmore, the great Marcus Garvey. All these people had influence on Nkrumah. So Nkrumah
What about Father Divine?
Yeah, of course, yes. So the fact that Muhammad Ali showed up, and if I might say, you know, I was a little boy in Accra. When he showed up in Ghana in May 1964, I can tell you it was an explosion over the country. Everywhere he went, people lined up. And of course, at that time, there were other African-Americans. Malcolm X came through, Maya Angelou, a whole host. That was the place. Somebody just wrote that in the 1960s, Ghana was the place to be if you were a Pan-Africanist and an activist and against imperialism.
It was the Mecca, just like Dar es Salaam, the commercial capital of Tanzania, became in the 70s. Sunny Young, you are an American who happened to be a white American. You have this kid, Muhammad Ali, frankly, who seems to be a guy that transcends races, really, cultures, you name it. He is even a Muslim. According to Islam, when you die before the sun sets, they have to bury you that day. If not, they bury you the following day. But here is the kid from Louisville. He is a Muslim in his own right, but guess what? He's been given an option. They are burying him a week later.
He transcended races, as you said, Shaka. I never met Muhammad Ali, but I do have a family Muhammad Ali story that really illustrates the people's champion. This was a few years after his final fight. It was the early 1980s. Mm. And my parents were at Hartford International Airport with my only sister, and they were standing at a rental car counter. My father looks across the foyer of the airport. Who was standing at another rental car counter but Muhammad Ali, by himself with no entourage? My father recognized him. He kind of gives him a little wave. Muhammad Ali walked across the foyer to meet my parents and my sister. That, to me, illustrates what kind of man he was. He was the people's champion. He loved all people.
The people's champion, indeed. There are so many stories. You know, people will tell you in Los Angeles, for example, he would actually even go to places where people like him wouldn't even get anywhere near, really. Places where people are so poor, homeless, and all that kind of stuff. And Muhammad Ali will be there. Trying to, you know, to add some value. In fact, as rich as he was, as famous as he was, when I was at UCLA in Los Angeles, he lived near somewhere downtown. Very downtown, not really in some of these exclusive places like Beverly Hills, Brentwood, Bel Air, you name it. He never went there.
And I liked how you mentioned him holding the lighting the cauldron at the 1996 Olympic Games.
Yes.
You know, his career in boxing was far from, I mean, it was over by many years at that point.
Right. Yes.
But emotionally, I remember watching on television when he lit the cauldron. I was just overcome with, you know, tears and joy, and it was almost a symbol of how much Muhammad Ali had come full circle.
Very interesting.
Full circle with being welcomed by society.
Well, we have to go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Tafa from the Republic of Ghana. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Hello, good evening, Shaka.
Usually terrific. How are you today, Tafa?
I'm great, Shaka. And what are you too?
I am terrific. What is your question, my friend? Time is not our best ally. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Shaka. I admire Muhammad Ali a lot. You know the reason why? My father used to talk about him a lot. And what happened is that my father passed away within a few hours. I heard about passing away of Ali Muhammad. Shaka, what I admire him about is, yesterday I was watching a television and one of his very good friends was talking about how Muhammad Ali connected himself with Africa. Mm-hmm. According to this man, he said Muhammad Ali asked him to call somebody from Africa, but he doesn't want any president or any minister should be called. He wants the man called ordinary African. He wants to talk to the ordinary African person. In fact, Shaka, I was very touched. I was very touched. This man has shown a love to Africans, and I believe we will continue to love him. Today, there's a lot of athletes in America who are also very great, but they are not showing any concern to us Africans. So you can see that there's no connection to attract people. But when you look at Muhammad Ali, he has shown a lot of love towards Africans.
Very interesting.
That's why everybody in Africa is mourning today.
Very interesting, very interesting. Thank you so much, Tafa, all the way from Ghana. Let's go to the other side of the continent. Good evening, Samuel from Uganda. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Ndugu Shaka. How are you?
I am hugely terrific. How are you, Samuel?
I'm very terrific, and thank you very much for bringing in Samuel Young.
You're most welcome, Ndugu.
I'm one of the recipients of Samuel Young's goodies.
Wow, you're the man, Sonny.
So
you're the
Samuel,
man.
The delivery came, right?
You're yeah, like a Muhammad Ali of sorts. You share some very goodies.
He can remember my voice. Now, I straight away go to Samuel Young. How can your sports section and segment assist African continent in maintaining the Muhammad Ali legacy? And how can young boxers in Africa be able to be included in the academy in the United States and Europe? Thank you, Shaka. And please, thank you, Samuel Young. It's nice seeing you once again.
Thank you, Samuel.
Thank you, too. Go for it.
Yeah, interesting question. You know, maybe it would be better served by Nnamdi Moeta in Los Angeles. But I think that there are some African fighters that have come to the United States for training purposes. But I think it's a very small number in terms that are actually based here in the United States. Mm-hmm. But I think it brings up a great possibility that maybe there can be some sort of cross-continent dialogue and programs for developing African fighters mm-hmm. here in the United States where there are better facilities. In fact, that's one of the points that Nnamdi always makes, that if you really want to make it mm-hmm. in prize fighting, you need to come to the United States and base yourself in one of the hotbeds for boxing, Los Angeles or Las Vegas, that type of thing.
I hear you. Let's go to the great nation of Nigeria. Of course, we have Patrick. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Mr. Saka. Good evening, Mr. Sonny Young, the sports expert.
Terrific, terrific. Patrick, what is your question, please? What is your question?
Yes, Patrick Okorafo here in Anotuku, here in Nigeria. Good evening, Mr. Saka. On behalf of my family and Okorafo's family here, and we send our heartfelt sympathy to the government of America and Muhammad Ali's family. Muhammad Ali, as we know, died a hero, an icon, and a disabled young man. He played a very good role in boxing and a disciplined young man. Mr. Sonny Young, sir, sports lovers in Nigeria, where can we go and sign our own condolence register here in Nigeria? The sports, that the boxing lovers, where do we go and sign our own paper? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Muhammad
Ali. 1 minute, please.
Where do we go?
Yeah.
To sign a book of condolence if you're in Nigeria.
Oh, that's a great question.
That should be answered perhaps by the State Department.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question.
Very interesting, very interesting. Ambassador Keen, it's not that we forgot you really, but I'm sure that you are still there. Talk to us about how you felt when you were a young kid back in Masaka in 1974, the Rambo in the jungle. Why did you wake up so early? To watch Muhammad Ali or to watch both? Or was it just Muhammad Ali, as a matter of fact?
Well, I was in a boarding school then in Masaka, you very correctly. And by that time, Ali had emerged as an icon. He had emerged as an icon for a variety of reasons. To begin with, his intellectual ability, I mean, the way he was, his poetry and wit. And then, I mean, he's speaking the truth, telling the truth to power. and refusing to go to Vietnam. Now, all those were things that some of which we couldn't really appreciate, but, I mean, Ali's became a significant symbol in our young minds and helped to crystallize our understanding of some of those struggles taking place in the civil rights and then the Vietnam War itself. So when Ali was set free, and Foreman by then was a legend because Foreman was not like Ali. Foreman was a knockout specialist. Within a few seconds, he'd win any other person. So when Ali and Foreman were brought together to fight, I mean, that was something that was really hyped in our country. And Ali by then, as I've mentioned, was an icon, and Foreman also was a legend. So we had to wake up very, very early in the morning, and people were saying that Ali could not defeat Foreman, given Foreman's vibrancy and all that. And after waking up, and then in the eighth round, as you know very well, Ali emerged and knocked out Foreman, and that really captured our imagination. And Ali, I mean, that was Muhammad Ali at his best. Plus one of the fights he had against Smoking Joe Frazier.
Now, Mr. Ambassador, of course, Muhammad Ali was a human being and therefore not perfect. How do you respond to some of his critics who say, yes, he may have loved Africa, but he really used to wine and dine with African dictators, for example, Mobutu Sese Seko. What about, in fact, even Marcos in the Philippines, a country that was under martial law at that time? And, of course, Marcos was not a Democrat.
Well, it's a complex, we're in a complex world. I mean, Ali could not change the world. But coming to Mobutu had his faults, but you can't compare Mobutu to, say, the Belgian colonial rulers. And I think Ali wanted to fight in Africa, and the only country that had the political will to host the rumble in the jungle was Mr. Mobutu, who had the means. And I think that's the background to which. And, I think it helps to raise the consciousness of the Congolese and make them feel happy. And, it's a complex issue, but I think it was a worthy cause. And the continent identified with Ali when he came to Africa. I mean, look, there has never been a similar fight in Africa. Not many people would like to come to Africa. And then, as I mentioned, unlike Mr. Foreman, who came and stayed in a 4-star hotel or 5-star hotel in Kinshasa a week or so before the fight, Ali took time and came to Kinshasa earlier on. And that's one of the reasons as to why the crowd in Kinshasa loved him. The ordinary people, forget about Mobutu, the ordinary people in Kinshasa. Ali spent more time with the ordinary Kinwa, the ordinary people in the slums of Kinshasa.
In fact, he stayed at a village, a neighborhood called Nsele, which was like an hour outside of the city of Kinshasa. But having said that, what about the priorities, frankly, of some of these African leaders? Yes, the public relations impact, you might say, was incredible. But what about an ordinary Zairean citizen, frankly, who probably couldn't, frankly, have access to service delivery from his own government? Should that one also be happy?
As I've said, Ali couldn't change the world, but I think he was a very significant symbol, and what he stood for is very vivid in our minds. He stood against oppression and injustice. And regarding what happened in Congo, I would imagine Mr. Mobutu did significantly much more than what the Belgians did.
Thank you.
In terms of, for example, educating the Congolese and so forth.
Time is not a best ally, Mr. Ambassador, but thank you so much. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Sunny Young, VOA host, The Sunny Side of Sports, Ni Akwete, Executive Director, African Immigrant Caucus, and Ambassador Kintu Nyago, Ugandan Permanent Representative to the United Nations. He joined us from VOA UN Studios in New York. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning is Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not beta, Africa. And Muhammad Ali lives, at least in spirit. Now, remember, of course, to keep the African hopes alive.